Welcome to the OCR A-Level English Literature Study Podcast. I'm your tutor today, and we're diving deep into one of the most rewarding and most misunderstood texts on the specification, Thomas Hardy's Selected Poems. Whether you're just starting out or polishing your final exam technique, this episode is going to give you everything you need to write a confident, perceptive, mark-winning response. So let's get into it. Hardy is a poet who sits right at the fault line of literary history. He was born in 1840 and died in 1928, which means he lived through Darwin, through the death of Victorian certainty, through the First World War, and right into the age of modernism. And you can feel all of that in his poems. He's not quite Victorian, not quite modernist. He's something stranger and more interesting than either. OCR want you to understand that tension, and the candidates who do best are the ones who can articulate it precisely. Now, before we get into the poems themselves, let's talk about what OCR actually reward. The assessment objectives for paper 8.19 are weighted as follows. AO1 is 15%. That's your argument and your use of literary terminology. AO2 is 25%. That's your analysis of language, structure, and form. AO3 is the biggest at 35%. That's context, and it's where most marks are won or lost. AO4 is 15%. That's your comparative work. And AO5 is 10%. That's your ability to explore different interpretations. Keep those percentages in mind throughout everything we discuss today. Right, let's talk about the core concepts. The first thing you need to understand is what I call Hardy's haunted universe. The collection is saturated with the idea that the past is not past. It persists, it intrudes, it speaks, and nowhere is this clearer than in the poems of 1912 to 13, the sequence Hardy wrote after the sudden death of his estranged wife Emma Gifford in November 1912. These are the poems that will anchor most of your exam responses, so know them inside out. In The Voice, Hardy opens with the devastating address, "Woman much missed, how you call to me, call to me." That repeated "call to me" is not just a rhetorical device, it's a formal enactment of obsession. The speaker cannot move on because the voice keeps returning. But here's the crucial thing for your AO2 marks. Look at what happens to the meter in the final stanza. Hardy begins the poem in a lilting, almost dance-like dactylic rhythm, da-dum-da-da, da-dum-da-da, which creates a hypnotic, trance-like quality, as if the speaker is being pulled into the past. But by the final stanza, that rhythm collapses. The lines become halting, stumbling. "Thus I, faltering forward, leaves around me falling." The metrical dissonance is not a mistake. It is Hardy's most powerful technique. The form breaks because the speaker breaks. Examiners award significant credit for candidates who connect formal disruption to psychological state. The second core concept is the indifferent universe. Hardy lost his Christian faith partly under the influence of Darwin's On the Origin of Species, published in 1859 when Hardy was 19. The idea that nature operates without purpose, without divine oversight, without care for human suffering, this haunts the entire collection. In The Darkling Thrush, written on the last day of the 19th century, Hardy surveys a landscape of absolute desolation. The land's sharp features seem to be the century's corpse outlaint. That word corpse is extraordinary. The century is dead, the landscape is a body. And yet, into this void, a thrush sings with full-hearted evensong of joy illimited. The tension is everything. Hardy cannot share the bird's joy. He calls it some blessed hope, whereof he knew and I was unaware. That final line is one of the most important in the collection. The speaker is excluded from hope. He observes it in nature, but cannot access it. That is the condition of the post-Darwinian intellectual, and OCR want you to connect it to that specific context. Third concept, time as both eroder and preserver. Hardy is obsessed with time, not in an abstract philosophical way, but in a viscerally personal way. In After a Journey, he returns to the Cornish coast where he and Emma first met, and he addresses her ghost directly. "Here too I come to view a voiceless ghost. Whither, oh whither, will its whim now draw me?" The landscape becomes a time machine. Hardy uses the present tense, "I come, I see," to collapse the distance between past and present. But the effect is not comforting. The past cannot be recovered. It can only be glimpsed. In Neutral Tones, written much earlier in 1867, the landscape of a frozen pond and a dying sun becomes a permanent record of emotional death. "Your eyes on me were as eyes that rove over tedious riddles of years ago." The word tedious is devastating. It suggests the relationship had already become a burden. and the neutral tones of the title, gray, white, ash, are the colors of indifference. Not hatred, not passion, just nothing that is Hardy's most frightening emotional register. Now let's talk about the Wessex construct. Hardy invented Wessex, a fictional version of Dorset and the surrounding counties, as the setting for his novels and poems. But it's not simply a picturesque backdrop. Wessex represents a world in transition, the old rural England being eroded by industrialization, urbanization, and modernity. In The Convergence of the Twain about the Titanic disaster, Hardy uses the collision of the ship and the iceberg as a metaphor for the collision between human hubris and the indifferent forces of the universe. The imminent will, Hardy's term for the impersonal force governing existence, prepared a sinister mate for her. The capitalization of imminent will gives it an almost theological weight, but it is the opposite of God. It is purposeless, mechanical, inevitable. All right, let's move into exam tips and common mistakes, because this is where marks are genuinely won and lost. Mistake number one, the biographical fallacy. This is the single most common error OCR examiners flag. Candidates treat the Emma poems as diary entries, as if Hardy is simply recording his grief. He is not. He is constructing a persona, selecting images, manipulating form. When you discuss the poems of 1912 to 13, always frame them as crafted literary artifacts. Say, Hardy constructs a speaker who, not Hardy, felt. The distinction earns you A01 and A03 marks simultaneously. Mistake number two, ignoring the awkwardness. Hardy's diction is sometimes archaic, sometimes colloquial, sometimes grammatically strange. Candidates who dismiss this as poor writing are missing the point entirely. Hardy was a trained architect. He understood structure. When he writes, "I am here," in After a Journey, two monosyllables, blunt and bare, that simplicity is a choice. When he uses the word womaning in The Voice, a verb form that feels almost wrong, that wrongness is the point. The language strains under the weight of grief. Always ask, why does this word feel strange? What effect does that strangeness create? Mistake number three, feature spotting. Do not simply identify a rhyme scheme and move on. In The Voice, the rhyme scheme ABOB in the first three stanzas creates a sense of control. The speaker is holding himself together. When that scheme fractures in the final stanza, the emotional collapse is made structural. That is the analysis OCR want. Technique plus effect plus context, always. Mistake number four, context dumping. Do not write a paragraph about Darwin and then fail to connect it to a specific image or word in the poem. Context must be woven into your analysis. The best way to do this is to ask, what does this word or image mean in its historical moment? Why would a reader in 1912 respond differently to the word corpse than a reader in 1850? Now, quick fire recall quiz. I'm going to give you a prompt and I want you to mentally retrieve the answer before I give it. Ready? Which poem ends with the speaker describing himself as faltering forward? That's The Voice. What is the name Hardy gives to the impersonal force governing the universe? The imminent will. In neutral tones, what is the color of the sun? White. The sun was white, as though chidden of God. Which poem was written on the last day of the 19th century? The Darkling Thrush, dated December 31st, 1900. What word does Hardy use to describe the Titanic's fate in The Convergence of the Twain? Sinister mate. In After a Journey, what does Hardy call Emma's ghost, a voiceless ghost? How did you do? If any of those caught you out, go back to those poems today. Let me wrap up with the key things to take away from this episode. 1. Hardy's most powerful technique is formal disruption. When the meter breaks, something psychological breaks too. Always connect form to meaning. 2. The ghost motif in the Emma poems is not supernatural. It is a psychological manifestation of guilt, idealization, and the impossibility of recovery. Frame it that way. 3. AO3 is your biggest mark earner at 35%. Context must be woven into your analysis, not bolted on at the end. Darwin, the Victorian crisis of faith, and the biographical impetus of Emma's death are your three key contextual pillars. 4. Group poems by theme for essay planning. Time as eroder versus time as preserver. The haunted landscape versus the indifferent universe. These groupings will help you write fluently under pressure. 5. Memorize short, versatile quotations. Neutral tones, starved sod, woman much missed, faltering forward, the imminent will. These can underpin arguments across multiple themes. That's it for today's episode. You've got this. Go back to the poems, read them slowly, and ask yourself, where does the form break? Where does the language strain? That's where Hardy is doing his most important work, and that's where your best analysis will come from. Good luck.